Welcome to Between Two Lips, a podcast dedicated to all things pelvic health for women. I'm your host, Kim Bopney, the Vagina Coach, and I am excited to share with you information from leading pelvic health professionals from around the world, stories from women at all life stages who have faced struggles and successes, and of course, I share a little about my own pelvic health journey as well. There is too much silent suffering associated with the female pelvis, and I am on a mission to change that. It's time we talk openly about a part of the body that deserves a whole lot more attention than it gets. Join me each week for casual and candid conversations that will both inform and inspire you to optimize your pelvic health for life. I'd like to thank the sponsor of today's episode, Feel Amazing Vulva and Vaginal Moisturizer. Studies show that moisturizing with hyaluronic acid is an effective treatment for vaginal dryness. Vaginal dryness is most commonly associated with menopause. When we reach menopause, estrogen goes for a steep decline, and so does hyaluronic acid. Hyaluronic acid is a naturally occurring molecule that our body makes on its own, keeping our eyes, mouth, skin, joints, and vaginas naturally lubricated. But our body's hyaluronic acid starts to decline in our 30s and 40s, and then more significantly post-menopause. There are other reasons that can lead to vulva and vaginal dryness, including the birth control pill, postpartum, overuse of pads and panty liners, certain cancer treatments, and some medications and health conditions. The Feel Amazing Vulva and Vaginal Moisturizer is made from hyaluronic acid and vitamin E to restore natural moisture back into the skin cells of the vulva and vaginal wall. It was researched and developed by BC-based pharmacists in collaboration with vagina owners age 35 and up, and my good friend Shirley Weir over at Menopause Chicks. Feel Amazing can be purchased online without a prescription. This means you can take control of your vaginal health and apply the moisturizer as often as your own unique needs require without having to consult a doctor first. I use Feel Amazing, have been using it for several years and absolutely love it. I put it on right after my morning shower and it truly does feel amazing. No mess, no goo, just tissue support and health that I absolutely love. I've got a link in the show notes for you so you can get started taking care of your vulva vaginal health by moisturizing your vagina today. Welcome to another episode of Between Two Lips. I'm your host, Kim Bopney, the Vagina Coach. And in this week's episode, I am joined by Dr. Aldine Zeno, who I met, we were trying to guess when that was, probably about 5 or 6 months ago at an event in LA. We were speaking at a menopause conference called the Wise Pause Conference. We were on panel together talking about pelvic health, and I just loved what she had to say. And she and I were talking afterwards, and she told me about the book that she was launching. So when she had that ready, she reached out and said, okay, it's ready, let's go. And I said, love to have you on the podcast to talk about your book and why you wrote it and her experience as starting out as an OB-GYN and moving into urogynecology, the work that she does to help women, but also herself being a CrossFit enthusiast and trainer, and how she navigated her own pregnancy postpartum journey with CrossFit, with her practice, and then the guidelines that she takes from ACOG and the professional organizations, but also then the learnings that she has had from a personal level and how she guides her patients through pregnancy, postpartum recovery, return to fitness. So we had a really great conversation about all things prenatal, postpartum, and even a little bit about heavy lifting and CrossFit in there as it pertains to the pelvic floor. So let's dive in. I hope you enjoy this week's conversation. Hi, Dr. Zeno. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today. Nice to see you again.
Yes. Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Yeah. It's been, when did we talk? It was few months
was that the ago. Fall well we talked a few months ago but we did that event
yeah that's
maybe
when,
five
yeah,
six I, months ago yeah
yeah yeah you've been a little bit busy lately. You have yes. recently launched a book, so yes. I want to get into pelvic health stuff, but I want to start Absolutely. With your book because I know that's a huge sure. accomplishment. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Yeah, and the book is very pelvic health focused. So it's called Thriving Through Pregnancy with Fitness and Black Mama Magic, or I lovingly call it Black Mama Magic. And it's a book about fitness and pregnancy. My inspiration to write it came from just going through my own journey as an OBGYN, going through pregnancy and also being an athlete and a certified CrossFit trainer. I was just surprised by the lack of evidence-based information out there for women, and especially that what I would find relatable as a woman of color. And so I thought there was definitely a need to be met there. And it does focus on, you know, the latest guidance about exercise and pregnancy, but as a subspecialist, as a urogynecologist, my focus really is on pelvic health. So I do spend, I think, a couple chapters toward the end of the book talking about postpartum recovery and, you know, some of the common questions I get, like, how can I squat without peeing on myself? Or how can I jump without peeing on myself? How do I get back to running? When can I start doing ab exercises? So I include those types of, you know, questions. There's specific workouts and recipes for pregnancy and postpartum in there. And I'm just so excited that I was able to get it out there in the world. And it, hopefully other athletes, and especially women of color and Black women, can relate to that experience and feel confident getting after it in their own pregnancies and postpartum journeys.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're covering two really underserved populations, which is the athlete in and of itself, and then women of color as well. So
absolutely.
I'm super excited to get my hands on it and read it. But what brought you here? So what brought you to the world of your subspecialty of urogynecology and focusing on pelvic health? How did you get here?
Yeah, so like I said, my background is in OBGYN, so obstetrics, the delivering babies part, and gynecology, all the other women's health stuff that we're expected to do. But there's several subspecialties within that, including urogynecology. During my training, my exposure to it mostly was through my program, which was located in a more affluent area in Northern California. And so my frame of reference for, you know, people dealing with prolapse and incontinence and other pelvic floor disorders was that it was more of a like an affluent person issue, or it was more of like a cosmetic issue. What finally clicked for me is when I did an international surgical service rotation. I worked with a urogynecologist in Guatemala, and just seeing how universal these issues are, how burdensome they are for quality of life, I was just really struck by the surgeries and the procedures we can do that are relatively simple, and a lot of vaginal surgeries, so, you know, relatively low risk compared to other surgeries, with good outcomes and good recoveries, and yet helping these patients feel validated and feel that they can return to their normal lives with less embarrassment and less pain or less better bladder control, that kind of thing. That's where it all really clicked for me as far as how prevalent these conditions are and how I could really make a difference in this space. So coming back and then going through subspecialty training, I was exposed to more of the, you know, ways that we work with other providers like pelvic floor PT or physical therapy and others to help kind of optimize these outcomes through non-surgical means, as well as other things that I can do in clinic and, you know, with different medications and things to help these women. So it's really been a journey. And now I would say that the latest iteration of that for me has been tying in the relationship between aging and perimenopause and menopause and how that all affects the pelvic floor as well. So these are really all things that I would say typical OBGYN residents are not necessarily taught in their training. And yet, obviously, it affects 100% of 50% of the population when you're talking about menopause and things. And, you know, all pelvic floor disorders affect somewhere between 1 in 2 or 2 in 3 women. So these are very common issues. We know that they're medical conditions. They're not necessarily cosmetic. And so a lot of people can access them through coverage with their insurance and things like that if they have insurance. So I really just enjoy the way that I can help women feel better about themselves with what I do every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I am so grateful for people like you. And I'm appreciative of the lens that you bring with fitness and also the collaboration with pelvic floor PT or physical therapy as well. I think that that is, yeah. I see it happening more than it has been. So that's I feel hopeful about that. I hope that it's just the norm going forward. But
I think it's kind of a twofold thing. I think on one hand, I think other providers and other patients themselves are a little more aware of it. And it seems like there's more discourse around this stuff, whether it's through social media, or I'll even be watching, you know, certain shows like And Just Like That, or a lot of other shows where they highlight kind of midlife and things, and it'll be just part of the conversation for the characters on the show. So I think people are becoming more aware of it. It's becoming a little more acceptable in conversation. And then even in the CrossFit world, there have been some studies specifically looking at incontinence and, you know, other pelvic floor disorders and high impact exercise and, you know, symptoms that can be brought out through doing high impact exercise. So again, I think people are having the conversations, which is really important.
So in your book, it really was looking mainly at starting at pregnancy. So looking at pregnancy, but you've also, as you were talking about, you've included the postpartum piece in there. So what's the current standard recommendations from an exercise perspective as it pertains to pregnancy? And then I want to get a little bit more granular and talk about your recommendations from a pelvic health perspective.
So probably within the last 5 years, the American College of OBGYNs revised their recommendations for exercise in pregnancy, and they've made it very clear that we want women to be active during like the vast majority of normal healthy pregnancies. So there are certainly exceptions for people that have certain risk factors that might compromise the pregnancy or, you know, the fetus health, but for the vast majority of women, ACOG emphasizes that the exercise recommendations are essentially the same for when you're not pregnant. So the recommendation is for 5 days a week of moderate intensity exercise, or about 150 minutes a week, and then 4 or 3 days a week of vigorous exercise, and to also include 1 to 2 days of strength training in that. So that's relatively new from more of like the national like nutrition and exercise recommendations. But the thing that they also emphasize is that all of this is relative. So when we talk about moderate intensity or vigorous intensity exercise, that's going to look different when you're pregnant because your body's changing compared to when you're not pregnant. I think that what a lot of trainers and even physicians kind of lack or are kind of missing the boat when it comes to their guidance is that a lot of people tend to make these sweeping statements about what people can do in pregnancy when so much changes in 9 months with your body and with the pregnancy itself too. So a lot of these recommendations really need to be tailored to maybe portions of the pregnancy. For example, you know, doing push-ups on the ground is pretty much the same when you're in your first trimester compared to like third trimester. It's just not physically feasible. So there's a lot of things like that that I think as for fitness trainers and for physicians, they tend to kind of miss the boat. On the other hand, I think that people are becoming more aware of, and we're also seeing more visibility from athletes doing things like Serena Williams and playing in the Australian Open when she was in her first trimester, going back to like Cheryl Swoopes, who was in the WNBA, one of the first athletes postpartum to return to professional training, like I think within the first 2 months or something postpartum. And her team went on to win the national title that year. So we're getting more visibility of women who are in their pregnancies or early postpartum and going back to their professional activity. But for average people, they're not going to, you know, first of all, our livelihoods probably don't depend on physical activity to the extent that it does right for a professional athlete. But a lot of us don't also have the same support systems to help us with the nutrition and the childcare and sleep and rest and recovery, all that stuff during pregnancy and postpartum to be that active. So I think on one hand, the pendulum has also shifted to where a lot of trainers, at least from what I heard when I was pregnant, are saying like, oh, if you were doing it before you were pregnant, it's probably okay to keep doing it. And it's cool. Like, I love seeing those commercials of like pregnant women surfing or a pregnant woman running the marathon. Like, that's awesome. But that doesn't, there's a lot of nuance to that, especially when you're talking about pelvic health, and especially when we're talking about preventing issues like incontinence and prolapse. So my goal with the book was to try and to get into those nuances and to try and help the readers maybe toe the line between, you know, just because I was doing it before, should I keep doing it? But I think from my experience when I was delivering babies and what I hear from my colleagues is it tends to be the opposite. A lot of women in our culture at least still get the messaging that they need to, you know, rest and put their feet up more, which isn't also the case for most people.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So what are, say, a couple of things that you would recommend from, like, thinking, we can't 100% guarantee that we are going to prevent prolapse or we're going to prevent incontinence, but we can right. step in with a few things to help mitigate that risk. So when we think of pregnancy, what are some of the things that you counsel your patients on as it pertains to fitness and their activity level? So if you, let's say you had a CrossFit athlete who is now pregnant, what recommendations would you be making thinking about the pelvic health?
So one thing that I try to impress on people is the idea of what's normal and what's not normal. And I think for a lot of women, they've been told, oh, it's normal to leak a little if you jump or cough or sneeze or that kind of thing. Or it's normal to leak a little if you're doing a squat or deadlift. And especially if someone is developing that before pregnancy or during pregnancy, I try to use the analogy that it's just like if you had a muscle injury anywhere else. So I recently, for example, tore my Achilles tendon. That was not my call to keep doing what I was doing, right? That was a wake-up call to do something different. And it's just like that for people that are dealing with any pelvic floor disorder, especially prolapse and incontinence. When a lot of patients get to the point of seeing someone like me, if I take them to surgery, sometimes I can physically see tears and separations in the normal support structures in the pelvis. And so especially in cases where people are like, well, is it normal that I'm already leaking a little bit and that kind of thing? Isn't it okay to just keep doing deadlift and like pee a little? And unfortunately, there's tons of videos of that online.
Yeah.
But no, that I try to impress on people to think about it just like any other muscle injury and to recognize you shouldn't keep doing what you're doing most likely, but there are ways potentially with working with a professional who's experienced in this area to potentially offload the pelvic floor during your squats or to change your breathing pattern so that you're not putting so much pressure in that area, like if you lift and you're kind of bearing down. So
yeah,
that's one thing for sure. If you're questioning if it's normal or not and it doesn't feel normal to you, probably isn't normal. Just ask an expert. The other thing as far as exercise in pregnancy and especially with pelvic health is for a lot of my patients, again, to not just with prolapse and incontinence, but to also consider the issue of pain. And for a lot of women, and again, it's kind of just like the issue with, you know, prolapse or loss of support, pain can come from so many sources. And for a lot of women, when they're if they're pregnant and they have pelvic pain, they automatically worry about their pregnancy and about the developing baby. But it can come from something as benign as like round ligament pain, which we often see, especially later in the second trimester, or, you know, pubic symphysis pain where, you know, you kind of have that midline pain down in the pelvis, those type and other types of shooting pains. So similar to these other pelvic floor disorders, these are technically benign conditions, meaning that they're not going to harm the pregnancy, but obviously they're painful. And there are people that are qualified to help kind of mitigate those issues so that you don't necessarily have to put your feet up and rest the rest of the pregnancy, you know, especially if everything else is okay. But at the same time, it doesn't do you any benefit to keep doing what you're doing if it's causing you pain every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so paying attention to those signals, I think, is super important.
Yeah, yeah. And I wholeheartedly agree. And I think, as you say, we're starting to notice trends of people. There is more awareness. There are more people talking about it. And at least if the seed is planted and you know, making people a little bit curious and maybe asking their care provider, or seeking out people who have the expertise from a fitness perspective, and also seeing more and more fitness people at least getting on the bandwagon of wanting to learn what the pelvic floor is. So that's all helpful. But when you like you talked earlier in part of your book, the you say Black Mama Magic, there are different considerations sometimes for the Black women and women of color. So what are those differences? What do we need to highlight, or what would women of color need to maybe pay more attention to?
So on one hand, I do think that there's been this increased awareness around Black maternal health disparities, and particularly when it comes to morbidity and unfortunately mortality. So the statistic that is often quoted is that Black women are 3 times more likely to die in childbirth compared to white women in the United States. That unfortunately is true. However, the story or the conversation about Black maternal health, in my opinion, can't just end there. And there's a great documentary called Birthing Justice, and it kind of dives into a lot of these structural racism issues that contribute to this problem. But it actually ends very hopeful, and it ends very joyful. And when I was watching that, I was like, we need more of these kinds of stories about Black women having joyful birth experiences. And I was so fortunate to have an uncomplicated pregnancy, and I was partnered with a fitness trainer, who Siobhan Robinson, who she had to have a labor induction, but she also was active throughout her whole pregnancy and had a safe, normal delivery. So I think that getting these stories out there and having it out there as something aspirational and as our truth is just as important to continue that conversation about Black maternal health. The reason for that is also that we know that there are certain things in our culture that make it, that present as barriers for a lot of Black women and create, you know, kind of divisions or, and you know, challenges when it comes to trusting their healthcare providers. And so I talk a lot in the book about my experience, you know, delivering in a hospital where I felt comfortable delivering with my colleagues, essentially. But I also talk about doulas and offer resources at the end of the book, talking about other birth worker resources. And I think that's also important because even for me, having worked in a hospital where we had doulas on the labor and delivery floor, my experience with that had been that it was a mostly affluent person's right to be able to even access that. And I think that's important for people to know that birth workers can be involved, you know, for an entire pregnancy and postpartum. They can just be involved for parts of the pregnancy or parts of the postpartum. There are programs, especially for Black women and in Los Angeles too, to support women with other birth workers like doulas and midwives and things. So I think, you know, one of my goals with this book was to help people feel empowered to advocate for themselves and to be aware of their different options when it comes to their birth journeys.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just jumping in to gently nudge you to put your pelvic health at the top of your to-do list today. I'm not talking about hundreds of Kegels. I'm talking about a whole body approach that addresses root causes and helps you get rid of your leaky bladder, your prolapse symptoms, your chronic low back pain, and your lackluster sex. My 28-day BuffMuff challenge has helped over 6,000 women stop suffering and get back to living. It's an app-based pelvic floor fitness program that gives you a 10-minute whole body workout each day for 28 days. That's it. 10 minutes is all it takes. You will build your bones, your heart, and your pelvic floor in a way that is unique and effective. Participants are always saying that they have never heard of an approach like this, and they have only ever been told to do Kegels or to never do Kegels, but instead do reverse Kegels. Kegels are effective and do work when done correctly and consistently, but most women don't know how to do them correctly, so even if they are consistent, they don't get the results they want, so they give up. I believe the pelvic floor needs to be trained dynamically with whole body movement, not with static Kegels done over and over. Come join me in my BuffMuff app and take the 28-day challenge. What do you have to lose except the pads, the symptoms, and the limitations? It's time to ditch the incontinence pads, eliminate bothersome symptoms, and get back to living. I have a link in the show notes below so you can sign up now and start buffing your muff right away. Yeah, a big, like, you know, a lot of people, a lot of cultures will say birth takes a village. And I've certainly, I think healthcare in general takes a village. And I love that you are providing those options for people so that they, at least that they know that they're there. Because sometimes it's just, there's a lack of awareness. I didn't even know about pelvic floor PT. I didn't even know about doulas or whatever. So I absolutely love that.
Right.
I want to shift. We've talked about the pregnancy. The next phase or next chapter is the postpartum. And I remember when I was first doing this work and getting into pelvic health, I was very focused on getting the information to women ahead of time with the eye of prevention and mitigating some of the risks that are increased from a pelvic health perspective with pregnancies. But then the more I was working with people and learning about pelvic floor and pelvic floor physical therapy and diastasis recti and all this, I then started to shift to postpartum recovery, because women were coming to me years after they'd given birth and wishing that they'd known, and what can I do now? And then looking at how recovery or the postpartum healing is revered in other cultures, and yet in North America it's a sprint back to the gym and we have to get our selfie and not look pregnant as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. And so kind of, you know, and then ended up creating another company focused on optimizing recovery and taking some of those traditional practices. And it was around the same time that CrossFit was starting to make a huge name for itself, and there was so many people pursuing CrossFit type activities or more intense activity as their way to feel strong again. So they feel, after they've performed one of the most amazing feats of strength, they often will feel at their weakest, and they're looking for something more intense because that's what they think they need to get stronger. And so there was this real battle, really, about the information that we were trying to say is allow yourself to heal and do the recovery and do the retraining so that you can go back to CrossFit. So what are your recommendations from a postpartum recovery perspective in general, and then getting again more granular thinking about the pelvic floor?
Yeah, that was such a surprising part of the journey for me, because again, having been trained as an OBGYN, I've taken care of pregnant women. I've seen women the first day postpartum, and then we often don't see them until like 6 weeks in the US. And then from there could be like 6 months to a year later. So there's obviously a lot that happens in that time, right? And so navigating breastfeeding, and for people that are chest feeding or choose to do that, navigating the nutrition, and then also having a newborn and just everything that comes with that, I think I was surprised at how much time I needed to recover. I was also surprised that when I delivered the baby, probably the first week or two, I probably felt weaker during that time than I did in the last few weeks of my pregnancy. Like, I remember, you know, when you're like 9 months pregnant and you're like trying to just flip over and you have to do like all these like acrobatic maneuvers. And I was just surprised that I still didn't have the core strength to just like do a regular sit up to get out of bed immediately postpartum. I think I was also surprised that when I did go back to CrossFit, and I probably started exercising again more around like 5 months. And again, this is during the pandemic, and I'm kind of doing my own reading around this. And I remember at 5 months, you know, I had started to do some exercise on my own, and then the CrossFit Open was coming up, which is like kind of this national thing where a lot of gyms will participate in these exercises, and you kind of can compare where you stand in your gym, and they even have this app where you can see where you stand regionally and nationally. And so one of my goals was to be able to do all the workouts at 5 months postpartum. And, you know, I was able to do them, but I didn't feel very good afterwards. And so it was finally around like 6 months postpartum, I met a coach she had a young child, and she was like, oh yeah, it took me more like 2 years to really feel back to myself. And I was really surprised. Like, in my mind, I was like, I worked out my entire pregnancy. I came in pretty healthy. I had a non-complicated delivery. And so again, I think that's a big part of the book, is to just share that part of my story and how common that is, and how we don't have a ton of great evidence behind it, especially in like medical literature. I think people in physical therapy are probably more aware, but there hasn't been a lot of research done on that because, you know, it's a very vulnerable time in somebody's life, so it's probably hard to actually measure a lot of the stuff that we're looking for, like, you know, simple things like when can I start doing sips and stuff. I do include a great graphic that was published in the British Medical Journal by a physiotherapist, and I apologize. They gave me permission to use their research, but I forget their name. It's a very, like, specific guidelines for kind of based by weeks of how to return to running. But the more
I
research...
Is it Grainne Donnelly?
Maybe. I think that sounds right.
She's from Ireland?
Yeah. It was somebody in the UK. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The way that they lay it out is more like get to this level and then go to the next level and get to this level and then go to the next, as opposed to thinking about, you know, I'm 6 weeks postpartum. Aren't I supposed to be doing X, Y, Z? Everybody's body is just so different. Everybody's birth experience is different. The way that we carry the pregnancies are so different. It changes every pregnancy as your body changes. So being more present in my body and learning kind of where I was, and I did end up eventually working, you know, with a personal trainer who's a PT also, but so that gave me more insight into, again, just focusing on where I'm at, what I was appropriate for my body at that time, and just not paying as much attention to what metrics that I randomly had in mind based on, like, exactly. So just being more present, I think, took a lot of that pressure off from feeling like I was behind or something. Another thing that I love right now, speaking of, like, social media, but I do think, like, in our generation, there's more of this, there's been this, like, soft girl season movement where people are just, like you said, paying more attention to the importance of just being present and allowing time. And we know a little about, with, like, tissue remodeling, that things are changing, you know, that scars heal after, like, 6 months to a year, and that's probably true of even the slit, you know, small injuries that we have in our pelvic floors from birth trauma. But just the gift of having the gift of time and being present, you know, as a new parent, I think is very important as well.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. And I remember, you know, exactly like you, I thought, well, I've been fit. I'm going to be fine. And, right. and I had uncomplicated pregnancies and births, and I used the EpiNo, which is, you know, that's ultimately what got me into this world of pelvic health. And I didn't have any external tearing. And I was like, okay, I'm done. That was all I need to do. And then I really wanted to get back to running. I just missed running so much. Mm-hmm. And I remember running at 2 weeks postpartum, which I wouldn't recommend anybody do. And I felt like it just didn't feel right. And so I stopped, which is good. But it was that wake up going, well, and when I look back at it now with everything I know, I find it shocking that more of us don't go, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, we just we have this, you just had a baby, you're fine, and you're going to be fine at 6 weeks, and everybody gets this green light, and that's what we have this, like, oh, well, then everything is going to be fine.
Yeah. And I think it's
so different.
I do think the medical industry, unfortunately, plays into that, right? Like I said, a lot of people just have their delivery, they come back at 6 weeks. What we're looking for at 6 weeks is basically to see that the stitches have healed or that the tissue edges have come together, basically. But that doesn't tell you anything about function. I'm like very open in the book, and I'll be open here. Like, I talk about even having sex for the first time. It was around like 6 weeks, and I was like, okay, I'm not ready. The thing for me was, like, I was dealing with postpartum atrophy, which, again, I've seen people and talked to them about that, but different story when you're dealing with yourself, right?
Yes.
And it really felt like sandpaper. I thought I had cut myself again, and I actually made another appointment to see my doctor, and they were like, okay, there's nothing wrong. I think it's just a little atrophy. I was like, okay, I knew that. I mean, I honestly just really had no idea, and it's hard to have that insight when you're in, like, newborn zombie land, but
and it's actually interesting. I was a few doctors that I follow, and you may have seen this as well too, at the recent Ishwish conference, mm-hmm. they're suggesting, and I don't think that it has been, 100% decided, but I think there were people saying we need a new term, which is genitourinary syndrome of lactation. So the whole menopause movement is bringing a lot of awareness to GSM, genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which is the atrophy, dryness, and urinary symptoms, and a whole host of other signs and symptoms that people may feel specific to the pelvis. Mm-hmm. But it mirrors the postpartum period.
Yeah.
Really.
100%. And, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember having, been years later, even post operative, mm-hmm. not so much the GSM per se, but there's a lot of things that I promote from a post op perspective that mimic what I recommend from a postpartum perspective. And now being working with a lot of people in the menopause phase, a lot of them have daughters who are now in that prenatal postpartum, and just bringing light to the things like the atrophy and the dryness and the vaginal symptoms that mimic. So share this with your daughter, share this with the younger population. A lot of the women that I now work with are in that menopause, perimenopause, postmenopause phase, many of which have daughters who are now having their own babies, and I encourage them to share, first of all, just share in general about pelvic health, but share this, the GSM symptoms, because it's going to be very relevant to the postpartum phase.
Absolutely.
But then the last thing I was saying is that until we go through it ourselves, sometimes it takes that personal experience. People can tell us all we want, and until we actually experience it ourselves, it doesn't hit home, or we don't take it as seriously.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely sheds a different light on it. And I do think that probably for me, going through that experience helped me be open to seeking different sources that maybe in medicine are not as traditional. But there's just, this is obviously something that women have been doing since forever. Yeah. So there's a lot of lived wisdom in pregnancy and in postpartum and in mothering and in, breastfeeding. And so I think, again, one of my goals with the book was to just hopefully encourage people to have those conversations, again, with, experts, but also with each other, and just sharing my story, I feel like, is one way that I'm able to do that.
Yeah. So CrossFit-wise, again, with yourself, you went back, your goal was to be able to do all of the exercises at 5 months, didn't feel so great doing it.
Yeah.
Speaking to somebody else, they were more like 2 years. So what was it? When did you feel like, okay, I'm back, I can do all the things, I feel great, I feel powerful? Maybe sometimes we don't feel the same, and we never will in certain exercises. I don't know. Was that your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I talk in the book about bouncing forward, which I think is, I didn't make that up. That's obviously something that people, I think, are thinking about now. That, traditionally we think of the postpartum phase being just the first year postpartum. And people talk about the fourth trimester being like that first, 1 to 3 months postpartum. But there's, I think, this idea now of being forever postpartum, and that your bodies are completely changed in some ways. And it's not necessarily good or bad. It's just, it is what it is. And so for me, and for a lot of reasons, my priorities have changed, obviously, now being a mother and now being a business owner and, so many other things. Yes, absolutely. I still want to be healthy and I still want to promote healthy lifestyles, but I'm not necessarily trying to track my PRs or my, my personal records or going after have more and more and more. For me, it's less about quantity and it's more about quality. And I'm much more intentional now, having gone through pregnancy and also having an injury like an Achilles tendon rupture, to really focus on the quality of my movement and longevity. So for me, it probably took around 18 months or so postpartum, somewhere around 1 year to a year and a half is when I started working more with a personal trainer. Because up until then, I was still dealing with some, I call it lightning crotch, and a lot of other people do too, but it was still some of that pubic symphysitis pain that for some reason I didn't really have during my pregnancy, but postpartum, and we know that that's a lot of it is hormonally influenced and things like that. We just have to give time for that to kind of come back together and heal. There's a lot of ligaments in the pelvis that, you know, just need time to kind of get strong again. But I also paid more attention working with the trainer on like my posterior chain muscles, especially like in pregnancy, or, you know, you got all this weight in front. So people tend to become more quad dominant or using, you know, a lot of that, those muscles in your front leg compartments. And so kind of regaining some of that strength in my glutes and then also in my calves, which especially having gone through an Achilles tendon rupture, like mm-hmm. I still focus on that. And then somewhere around like 18 months, I started to feel more like, okay, I can run without pain. I'm feeling stronger, which is why I decided that I thought at that time about doing a triathlon. And so that's how I kind of end the book, because that was, for me, it kind of mirrors my journey and my approach to fitness in general now. It was more about setting a goal and feeling some sort of small win for claiming my time to do the training, especially mm-hmm. as a mom, and to carve out, you know, an hour and a half in the mornings to do that type of thing completely by myself and like untethered by people wanting something from me. So being able to do that just really gave me this appreciation for approaching fitness in a way that's more about, again, claiming my time and promoting a healthy lifestyle for my family as opposed to hitting certain numbers. Yeah.
A few questions before we wrap up about specific to CrossFit, because that's an area of focus for you. We do have evidence about high intensity activity and pelvic floor and more prevalence with things like incontinence. Not so much with prolapse, actually. Like it's not what we think it is. I think there's a lot of fear around specifically prolapse and heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. So are you, like, do you modify any movements in CrossFit? Do you recommend any modifications? Do you recommend specific breathing patterns that would offer more protection, quote unquote, or more awareness to the pelvic floor for yourself or for your clients who are doing CrossFit?
Yeah, there's definitely some good research out there about some of the common culprits when it comes to things that provoke incontinence. And probably the reason that incontinence is more prevalent among CrossFit athletes compared to prolapse is that's exactly what we see in the general population too, right? Like incontinence is like 1 in 2 women over the course of their lifetime. Whereas prolapse, the numbers vary, but there's one study that looked at, you know, prevalence of people that actually have symptoms, and that was closer to like 15 to 20% of women over the course of their lifetime. So the common culprits when it comes to CrossFit movements are squats, box jumps, and then deadlifts. So the thought behind things like, or and jump roping too, actually.
Yeah, double unders, yeah.
Double unders especially. So double unders are pretty cool. It's like kind of a cool, you know, thing to check off on your list of CrossFit things. But obviously with double unders and box jumps, you're dealing with a high impact activity. And the thought is potentially athletes may not be able to activate those pelvic floor muscles in an efficient or effective way when they're doing those types of movements. Because we know that with incontinence, it's not just being able to squeeze really hard, which I think the common belief is that you have to have like really strong Kegels or something.
Yeah.
It's about being able to relax those muscles in the appropriate time and contract them when you need to. So when it comes to people who are dealing with incontinence, I'll kind of focus in on those movements and try to modify them. In general, I'm looking at either offloading weight or modifying the impact. So if we're talking about double unders and box jumps, potentially step ups as opposed to box jumps, or definitely not like rebounding where people like jump up and jump down like over and over again. Mm-hmm. Maybe see how you're doing with just jumping up into like the correct position, knees bent to absorb the impact, stand up and then kind of step down. With double unders, if people are not able to do that without leaking, even as single unders, potentially even considering a different type of cardio until that person has done some more focused physical therapy for that area and then potentially be able to build up to that. With any lifts, but especially squats and deadlifts where you're potentially dealing with a lot of heavy weight, again, you can modify the weight itself, but one thing I'm looking for is to make sure people aren't bearing down a lot. So I know with some coaches I worked with in the past, they would say things like, hold in your power while you're doing the lifts and things. In medicine, we call that Valsalva, which is where, you know, you take a deep breath and then you go to do the lift, and on your way up, you're like really straining, right? You're holding in your power. And interestingly enough, that's a lot of times what we're telling people to do in delivery, right? Is sometimes they're told to not make sound when they push or something like that to get them to try and what we call closed glottis push. But when it comes to lifting, again, if you're trying to go for quality over quantity and preventing injuries to your pelvic floor, I'll encourage people to do open glottis lifting, so they're kind of breathing throughout the lift and never at any point holding their breath. Other ways to offload, instead of just taking weight off of the, you know, barbell, for some people it may mean just focusing on air, quote unquote, air squats, or just no weight, even doing something assisted like holding on to a pole or holding on to the side of a wall. Again, so you're taking some of the weight off of there. And then with squats, I could talk all day about like proper technique, but technique really does matter, especially I feel like with squats, same with deadlifts and any lift, but there's a lot of factors that play into that, like not just strength, but mobility too. And then potentially considering modifying the depth of the squat. So doing a squat to a box or a bench and then focusing on that movement until you can kind of progressively do that with good mobility and good form without, you know, prolapse or incontinence symptoms. So I think hopefully, you know, coaches, if they're listening to this, or, you know, a good coach or a good trainer will be able to kind of do those types of modifications instead of just saying, oh, don't do that. Like my first doctor told me when I was pregnant, they just said, oh, I don't think you should keep doing CrossFit. You know, I don't think that's the answer either. I think that with the proper coach, that you can coach people through proper technique as well.
Yeah. And one of your, like, we're not going to get into this, but a part of your practice is performing surgeries. So potentially incontinence surgeries, prolapse repairs, what have you.
Right.
Do you have any sort of max amount of weight that a person could lift? Like, so many people go through a pelvic surgery and are told they can't lift anything over X pounds. Mm-hmm. And I find that, like, it's coming back to, it's not personalized. What 25 pounds to one person is incredibly heavy. 25 pounds to a very trained person is nothing.
Right.
And so I don't think we ever will have a not over this weight, but just lifting practices in general, do you think that there should be limitations on people who have had a pelvic surgery as it pertains to lifting and higher intensity activity?
So the common thing people say is to avoid lifting over somewhere between 10 and 20 pounds. And they'll often say that for the first 6 weeks after surgery. I've worked with mentors who said to just stop heavy lifting, period, after prolapse surgery. There is zero evidence for that, and there's very few things in medicine where we make, you know, these types of strong statements with zero evidence, but for some reason across the board, when it comes to women dealing with prolapse, for some reason physicians feel comfortable saying that, and there's zero evidence for that. So again, that's where I encourage people to work with a skilled trainer or physical therapist or chiropractor to help them go through, you know, whatever movements they are within their goals, whether it's lifting or just squatting or whatever, and to focus on doing that with good form and then progressively add resistance or weight or whatever. We also get that in our, you know, pregnant and postpartum patients. And one of the things that I appreciate about the new exercise guidelines from the American College of OBGYNs is that they really emphasize relative perceived exertion, or RPE, which is something that I think a lot of fitness, you know, trainers and things are familiar with. But it's exactly as you said, if you were lifting, you know, deadlifting over 300 pounds before you were pregnant, if you're told to just lift 20 pounds for the whole pregnancy or postpartum, you know, you're going to miss out on a lot of gains, as we would say. Like, you're going to miss out on a lot of potential benefits of lifting heavier. And honestly, that probably wouldn't get a lot of those people to that moderate intensity or definitely not vigorous intensity exercise. So just being aware of what your limitations are, I think, and then being able to modify that again with guidance throughout pregnancy, postpartum, also super important.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking my language. Yeah. Love it. So where can people find your book and where can people find you so they can follow along and potentially even work with you or and find out more about your practice?
Sure. So my book, Black Mama Magic, is out right now on Amazon. So you can look it up on Amazon and order directly there. My goal is to have it in brick and mortars and, you know, bookstores and things by summer or so. But for now, it's on Amazon. They're delivering all over. As far as where I'm physically located, I'm in the LA metro area in Glendale. You can find me on Instagram at dr.aldine. So that's dr.aldine. And on my website at www.draldene.com. So www.draldene.com.
Awesome. And we'll share those links down below as well. Thank you so much for your time. Huge congratulations to you on your book. I know much work that takes, especially when you, as you say, you've got your own children and family and practice and everything. So thank you so much for your work, for all that you do to help women, and for sharing your knowledge with us today.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me. This was awesome.
That's it for another episode of Between Two Lips. Thank you so much for choosing to spend part of your day with me. If you are enjoying the show, I recommend subscribing so you don't miss an episode, and I would also be grateful for a positive review. This will help get the information I share into the hands of more people who may not even know that help exists. Finally, I encourage you to take what you learn here and put it into action so that you can ensure that what you hear me and my guests share is not just lip service.